Hey, good evening, everybody. How you doing? Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the program tonight. Yeah, I like Friday. I know some people work 6 days a week. I used to do that, but not right now. They'll probably come to that, getting a part-time job someplace. But the reason I like Saturdays now, Molly doesn't have preschool, and I get to stay in bed and just lay there. Oh, my God. It's great. Hey, we have some very interesting topics to get into tonight that, on the one hand, are pretty damn scary. On the other hand, I think should possibly give us pause to think here. I know it has me. I've spent the better part of the day reading stuff that I've gotten behind on. Where we are in the economy, what, I kept thinking about that guy. I was on CNBC the other day. I forget his name, but the one screaming at the other, speculators, the other gamblers. What was that? Was that commodities trading? What was that? I don't even know. But he's screaming at the other gamblers and, is this what we want? You want to pay for somebody's house as an extra bathroom? And they did me, I thought to myself, even before it was brought up today, Oberman brought it up tonight, I think, what's with this ass? You know, he's talking about, do you want to pay for somebody else's house? No, jerkwad, let's not. I'll tell you what, let's not. Let's not pay for someone else's bank and someone else's commodities training center like yours. Let's not pay for anybody's anything, right? Every person for himself. Or herself, right? This is what these people want. Screaming at these, and a couple of those workers, no, I don't want that. Well, what happens, you little snot, if you lose your job and your house goes into receivership or the bank starts selling? What do you do? Huh? This is a part that's not talked about in this country, but this is the part of the downfall of the economic system, the end of the economic system. Barack Obama keeps talking about, the banks are going to get back on their feet. No, they're not. They really are not. Oh, my God. Why is that not so hard for common folk to understand? The banks know it. They're just sucking up as much money as they can get. Oh, Jesus. You know, throw us another $700 billion, we'll take it. Throw us another $800 billion, we'll take it. Oh, but aren't you supposed to be doing something with the money, like, making the economy flow again? Oh, yeah, okay. Give me some more. Look, now the pigs in America are saying that the reason bank stocks continue to tumble and the economy and the stock market continue to go in the tank is because President Obama keeps talking, the nationalization of banks phrase keeps coming up. The truth is, Obama keeps saying it's not going to happen, which, he ought to be honest. What, Citibank stock fell to, what, $1.20 today? I mean, my God, Bank of America is about to go under, but they want more money. Give us more money, billions more. So this little twit in Chicago screaming on CNBC the other day about not rescuing homeowners. Why, you smart mouth? How about your business? Huh? But anyway, the part that's never talked about is the fact that we got into this mess because of this rugged individualism crap that's been pushed down everybody's throat for so many decades in this country. Like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and all this other garbage. I never could quite understand that. Anyone with the sense God gave a tree stump could look around and see that nobody makes it in a vacuum. Everybody has help. The billionaires had help getting there. Whether they stole or robbed or lied or cheated or stole, they still had help. They had gullible people that helped them get there. Workers, inventors, everybody, I mean, all the way up and down the food chain. Nobody ever makes it on their own. I remember back in the 70s, all the foaming at the mouth and the frothing and the eyeballs popping out because of the, I forget the case, it was a university on where, the West Coast, the affirmative action, the first college affirmative action case. Don't email it to me because I really don't care. I'm just mentioning it in passing. And all the screaming in this country about, you know, that's so unfair. Everybody pull themselves up by the bootstraps. It's America. No. Kiss my America butt. What do you mean? You know, in the first place, anything involves black folk in this country, you know, to tell them, well, just pull yourself on your bootstraps. Everybody has equal. You know, I've had a lot of black friends who bring it up and just sit there and say, Malloy, we just sit there and laugh our asses off in a sad, miserable kind of way. What are you white people saying? Well, yeah, but that's a whole different area, too. But the greed, and this is what capitalism does. Capitalism eventually paints itself into a monstrous corner where it dies. You know, it just feeds like a huge beast. It feeds on everything. You know, just keep in mind, somebody wiser than I said that a capitalism system is a system based on infinite accumulation in the form of money and unlimited destruction of nature. I mean, that's a working explanation of capitalism for me. So we finally got to that point. That system has destroyed nature so badly, we are now turning our planet into an oven. And eventually, maybe not you and me, we'll be dead and gone. Maybe not our grandchildren, they'll be dead and gone. But within a few, a couple of hundred years, if this doesn't get turned around, it doesn't look like it's going to, this planet will become an oven. So, you know, oh, no, don't go there, Malloy. Oh, don't start that. It's Friday night. Okay, I'm not going to. But I'm just saying, you know. The aspect of all this crisis that people don't talk about is the astonishing greed. I mean, when you have goddamn baseball players demanding $10, $20, $30 million a year, when you have some obese, gargantuan talk show host demanding $25 million, I mean, when you have Wall Street scum who've never produced anything in their lives except debt that they then package and sell. And they get billions of dollars of bonuses. Are we kidding ourselves? Come on. I mean, come on. So this crazed greed is good madness. That's why we're here. That yoke to the utter insanity of capitalism. Utter insanity. Now, saying that in this country is like saying, you know, Jesus was a pimp or something. I mean, it gets people just absolutely crazed. Capitalism. What? Capitalism is over. It's been a murderous, murderous form of economic system. Any country or society in the history of the world that has used as an organizing principle capitalism has been doomed. I mean, take a look. You don't believe it?
Well, no, Mike, that's because what you just said, greed.
I said greed coupled with the inherent flaws, and they are murderous in capitalism. It'll work for a while as long as you have massive amounts of underclass. Now, remember, the most perfect operating system for capitalism is slavery. That is perfect. Then it works as long as you have millions of people who are willing to be slaves and you know, eat dirt and live in huts and say, yes, a master, where can I cut the chop the cotton? You know, as long as you have that, you're home free. But once this is one of the reasons that people so over the history of the human race, always struggled against freeing the slaves, no matter where the slaves were, no matter what color they were, because people understood, oh, my God, if I lose my slaves, then, I may have to go to work or I lose the reason I'm rich. You know, capitalism demands slaves of one sort or another. They could be slaves to get paid in by being given housing and bowls of slop when the day is over, or they can be paid 8 cents an hour, or they can be paid $20 a month, but they're still slaves. They're still slaves. Well, we apparently have reached that endpoint. The law of diminishing returns has kicked in, and not only is it pointless to accumulate money any longer, we also have reached that point where capitalism has destroyed nature.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working, that's the way you do it. Let me tell you.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
Past the hour. And when did it become a good idea, since we're talking about how capitalism is dead and President Obama is wasting not just his time, but whatever capital, so-called political capital, he has here at the beginning of his administration by continuing to throw money at banks? The banks should be cut loose. Let the sons of bitches die. We'll figure out a new way to set up a banking system. Let it die. It's going to die anyway. The question is the banking system going to die now when it has only massively wounded this society, this country, this economic system, or is it going to die later when it takes down the entire system? Which way is it going to be? And we have thrown hundreds of billions, trillions more dollars into this gaping black hole. Which way is it going to be? So, you can listen to the conversation from the economists out there, dueling economists about, well, this idea, well, this is blah, blah, blah. But let's put it in just plain, simple, I can understand and you can understand language. The banks have destroyed the country. They've destroyed the economic system. They've destroyed everything. All right. Now, when I say banks, I mean the banks, but I also mean the whole financial services network. It's all in the toilet. I mean, are you not aware of that, Truth Seeker? Citicorp and these other huge monster banks, their stocks are all selling for under $2. I mean, come on. And they're whining, well, as long as they talk about nationalizing the bank, our stocks are going to go down. Nationalize my ass. They should be left to die. Let them die. When did it become, when did we get to the point where we started to believe that people, that the way you create wealth, I think that's what the right wingers say, that the way you create wealth is to bundle up and sell debt. When did we get to the point where creating wealth could be done without making anything, without growing anything, without digging anything out of the ground? Why are the only companies not in trouble are the oil companies? That's right, because they still dig something out of the ground. But these vampire bastards who have destroyed the country, and they're still up there with their hands out. You know, one hand on their crotches, the other hand stuck out waiting for more taxpayer money that we don't have anymore because they stole it all and they want more. But this is what capitalism always wants. They want everything. They want your child to go fight their wars for them and die or be horribly maimed. And then, of course, capitalism doesn't want to pay for the horrible maiming.
Well, sorry, you know, you served your country. Yeah, right.
They want your children. They want your spouse. If you're a woman, they want your husband to work 16-hour days until he has a goddamn heart attack at 53. If you're a husband, they want your wife to work a second job to make their bottom line better while they pay the woman 65 or 70% of what they pay the man to do the same crappy work. They want your children not just to go fight their wars, but until laws were passed, stuff your children down a goddamn mine someplace and let the little boogers die at 16 from tuberculosis. I mean, Stop, you people that think capitalism is a good system. It's murder. It's murder. It's mayhem. It's destruction. Why do you think we have an atomic bomb? Why do you think we have nuclear weapons? Huh? Anybody know? Let me see some. There's somebody in the back. Why do we have nuclear weapons?
To preserve freedom.
No! We have nuclear weapons to make sure that as we try to gobble up all the resources on Earth, some other gobbling bastard doesn't try to gobble ours while we gobble his. That's why we have nuclear weapons. Are you crazy? Why do we have global climate change? Same answer, pretty much. So anyway, there is a solution. Hell yes, there's a solution. If there wasn't a solution, I'd probably suck the gas pipe after leaving a nice letter to my wife and 4.5-year-old, I can't take it anymore, and check out. But there is there's plenty of solutions out there. As soon as we get our eyes out of this slimy box of capitalism, horse manure. Oh, my God. But we're going to continue to do it. You know why? Because, first of all, we are totally ignorant. We as a people, we are completely ignorant. We're ignorant of our present situation, and we are ignorant of history. And we panic when we hear a couple of phrases. The queers want to get married. Ah! A woman wants the right to an abortion. Ah! Maybe it's time for democratic socialism. Ah! 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 You see what I mean? You know what Eric Holder said the other day in a different context, we're a nation of cowards. I wanted to jump through the television and just start, dapping with him and going, yeah, right on, you got it, Brother Hill. You're right, Eric. Of course, he was saying it in a different context. And everybody, I guess, on the right wing had just climbed down his throat.
Nation of cowards? What?
Totally missing what he said about afraid to confront the race issue in this country. But the race issue is the underpinnings of capitalism in this country. That's why nobody can face it. That's one of the reasons. Oh, God. But you get this. I know you get this because you're smart. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. probably the only way out of this financial mess that the Republicans got us into. They were the ones who rode the horse of American consumerism till it died, with some help, some enabling by Democrats. There's no question. But this is the Republican model. What they're hoping for is that the economic system, and along with it, what is left of a democratic or representative form of government, that all crashes at the same time. And then, of course, they can set up the corporatist model. You can get an idea of the model from Brave New World, from 1984, from half a dozen things I'm drawing a blank. The guy that wrote Slaughterhouse-Five. Oh, please, Vonnegut. Come on, brain. There's all sorts of literature that you can go to, fiction, and get the idea of the model that Republicans, the so-called conservatives, these demons, what they want. And if things continue, they're going to get it. A militarized form of American corporatism / fascism. It's there. It's just waiting in the wings. One way to stop it, of course, is to utterly and absolutely defund the military-industrial establishment, murder it, just stop it. But that's for later. For right now, let these banks die. Let them die. Not another dime. Not a dime for this. You know, a lot of Republicans in Congress who were all involved in the TARP program and then said, well, you know, we want to see where the money's going. Oh, no, they didn't. They were just being their little obstructionist games. They couldn't care less. They want as much money to go to the banking industry as possible, because every dime that goes further defunds every single social safety net program in the country. And this is what Republicans have been working for a long, 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 long time. Let the banks die. Let them die Monday. Barack Obama should say Monday. He really should. No more money. That's it. It's all over. And let the economic system crumble all of a sudden. Let's get it over with. It's going to happen anyway. This is what all of our economic advisors told the Russians when communism pulled out. They said, okay, let it crumble. Don't try to save anything. And the Russians, of course, were very pissed off, because here comes capitalist America telling them to let it crumble. But, okay, let's apply the same thing here. Let it crumble. When the noise of the rumbling and everything falling into the pit stops, then let the government provide whatever financial services that are necessary to start the intergenerational problem or solution that we'll have then, and that is to rebuild a system that makes sense. And let's do it in a democratically socialist kind of way. Okay?
Oh, Mike, when you say socialist, I have to run to the bathroom.
Yeah, I know. But one of the reasons that there's a slight connection, a little hook here that really intrigues me. I've been in radio for 25 years. And, you know, I've often said nobody ever told me what to say. Now, that's not true. That nobody ever told me what to say when I went to work for Air America 5 years ago or whatever it was. But prior to that, I was told over and over and over again what I could not talk about. Only I wasn't given specifics. I was just told broad generalities. And not taken into the general manager's office and you know, say, Malloy, you talked about something last night. We can't talk about that. No. It's much, much more sophisticated and subtle than that. Anytime over that roughly 20-year history before I went to Air America, and then when they turned out to be capitalist pigs who didn't care, and I came to Nova M, and they couldn't get funded and went down the toilet, and now I'm with On Second Thought. I mean, it just continues to go like this. But the reason, this is why liberal talk has failed, and it still has a toehold, but why it's had to struggle for every single gulp of oxygen any of us ever got. It's not because there's not an audience. Jesus Christ, there's 100 million people out there that want to hear something other than this garbage put out by right-wingers. But the corporations that own communications industry will not let it happen. Oh, no. Oh, no. Why should we allow you to get out there and tell the truth? Why should we allow some of you liberals, get on the air and start talking about the death of capitalism? We're capitalistic. Why should we let you? Okay, so that's the way it's always been. When I worked at WLS in Chicago, you know, I was one of the token liberals there. Nancy Skinner and Ski Anderson had a show on Saturdays and Sundays. I was constantly reprimanded about what I was talking about. It was owned by ABC Disney at the time. And, you know, my attitude more or less to the people there, I had a 5-year contract, lasted a little over 3 years, because my attitude was, bite me. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Don't say this. So obviously that was headed for a brick wall, and we finally hit it. Ski Anderson and Nancy Skinner, they had a weekend show, and they got some really good information on Henry Hyde about his criminal activity. And I mean, God, they had some stuff that was, they had some people ready to talk, you know, whistleblowers ready to talk about Henry Hyde's criminality. And they let the general manager know, Ski and Skinner did, and they were more or less told, I'm way paraphrasing here, but it was made clear to them that if they went on the air and talked about this, they'd be fired. They'd be goddamn fired. Henry Hyde's ass, as big as it was more important than Ski and Skinner telling some little shred of truth. Not the big overall truth on Henry Hyde, but just a little shred of it. So to warn them not to even think about telling the truth again, WLS took one of their 2 days of broadcast away from them, cut them from 2 days to one. And the attitude from the general manager was, now, try it again and your asses will be on the street. You see how this works? Very simple. Now, on the same station that we all worked for there, it was 90% right wing. Like I said, I was a token liberal. There was a guy at night, Nate Clay. Used to come on 1 o'clock, only on the weekends, 1 o'clock in the morning. And then Nancy and the Ski. And the other, all the rest of the broadcast day was right wing neo-Nazi crap. So while we were censored, Skinner and Ski, Anderson and me, and anybody else that dared challenge this, while we were censored, the right-wingers were told, full bore, go ahead, rip the goddamn hell out of everything in this country that is not pure right-wing capitalism. Rip it to pieces. And they did, and they still are. Rush Limbaugh, why has he been so successful? We played that little bit of sound for you last night of one of Rush Limbaugh's listeners near hysterics because she's terrified that the liberals want to save her worthless, brain-damaged ass. You heard that? And Limbaugh just,
well, now, yeah, they want to take everything. They want different rules for themselves. They want
as long as – now, let me – does it make any sense to you that corporate America sponsors somebody to the tune of $25, $30, $40 million a year who gets on the air and tells straight-ahead lies that terrorizes people, has been doing it for 2 decades? Does that make sense to you? Yes, of course it does, because he protects them, because the whole system is a lie. When did creating wealth come to mean selling somebody else debt? But that's what it's come to. And why are we selling debt? Not we, but why are the big money makers, the money creators, the so-called wealth creators, why are they selling debt? Because there's nothing left to sell. There's nothing left to sell. Tell me something. Go ahead. Crickets, crickets. So, the right wingers like Hannity and Limbaugh. Hannity is one of the dumbest men on earth. I mean, he really is. If you ever listen to him, he is an ignorant. It just is ignorant. And this is what corporate America wants. Limbaugh is like a. He's like a magician, a cheesy magician in a carnival sideshow, you know, where you pay 25 cents to go in and watch him pull snakes and rabbits out of his ass or a hat or his ears or whatever. And his function is to keep everybody diverted, to keep his people diverted, confused, and frightened to death that there might be a solution that would help them. No.
Don't pay attention to that. Look over here. Let me show you another rabbit trick.
And why are these guys paid so much money? Because the one function they do, and they do quite well, is protect not just corporate America, but this capitalistic system that is dead. Don't you? Look, tomorrow morning when you get up, stick your head outside and take a deep breath. You smell that stink? You smell that? That is the corpse of capitalism. It's dead, folks.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. So who killed capitalism? Well, you can make the argument, I guess, that the same people who created it, it was theirs to create, theirs to destroy. In this particular instance, who is killing American capitalism? The bankers, the financial services industry. They're selling debt. They've been selling debt. Now you tell me, how does that little Ponzi scheme keep working? You don't manufacture anything. You don't grow anything. You don't mine anything. What you do is you create something called debt. You take other people's indebtedness and you bundle it up and then you slice it into little pieces and then you sell it to people all over the world and you get rich. What have you done? You have destroyed the system in which you work, in which you are feeding, like a goddamn cannibal, like a barbarian. The masters of the universe, the financial services gurus in this country, are like Genghis Khan, or worse, much worse. They are devouring everything in their sight, everything, destroying everything. And they want more, more, give me more. I want billions more, 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 more. The best thing to do would be to pull the plug on this filthy industry and let it die. The second best thing to do would be to line them up and shoot them. That's usually what happens when people destroy a country. This is what George Bush said. This is what so many people have said. A threat to our society. We will kill and maim and bomb and incarcerate. Okay. All right. But let's get the people who are real. Does anyone out there really think that communism or socialism or the Islamists or something, some little phony construct called Al-Qaeda, anybody think that they are really, that they're the problem? Are you serious? You can't be that stupid if you think that. You want to hear the problem? Let me give you an example. We had it last night. I want you to listen. The pig man lies, you know, every time he looks himself in the mirror. But I want you to listen to the plaintive whining and squealing of his collar.
Answer your question. Why do so many liberal Democrats want to basically tear apart and rebuild the country? Since they don't control enough of it to satisfy them.
There you go.
They want to.
They live here, too. I don't understand. Like, they're not.
But well, they are going to establish separate rules for themselves by which they live, such as they'll be able to not pay their taxes and work in government at high levels. They're not going to be subject to whatever greenhouse gas laws there are. They're not going to be subject to any of this sort of. They have, because they're too important, you see.
Yeah, see, right there. They're going to establish laws. They're not going to pay taxes. He's talking about himself. God damn it! He's talking about the very class of Americans who are destroying the country. Himself, the financial services industry. Do you think Limbaugh pays taxes? Do you think Limbaugh lives by different rules? Yes, he does. He can go out and deal in street drugs. He can drive himself deaf with his illegal use of drugs and get away with it. Go ahead, play some more. Play some more.
And they all think they're part of the elite. Some of them are going to get canned. Some of them are going to get the shaft here. They just don't know it. But today, forget Democrat. These people are liberal socialists now. They bear no resemblance to the Democrat Party of John Kennedy.
Oh,
for example.
No, you're right. I agree.
It's about power. It's about control.
Save me, Rush.
These people genuinely look out over this country from their lofty perch. They don't like what they see.
No.
Otherwise, well, then they can go somewhere else. Like, I don't understand. Why do they have to stay here?
Why don't
they leave us alone?
Leave us alone.
At this point, Gretchen, I don't care
about
the why.
Okay, that's enough. Leave us alone. Leave us alone. This poor, whiny woman is... Why don't they leave us alone? Rush, I want you to eat me. I want you to rip my arms and legs off and suck my blood out. Why don't the liberals and the social democrats leave us alone? Oh, Jesus Christ, Rush, save me, save me. Here, I'll give you my kid. You hear that? If you listen to Limbaugh, you will hear that all day long. Help me, Rush! Help me!
I don't know how to think. I don't know what to do. The liberals are... Oh, why don't they go somewhere else? The liberals. While Limbaugh sits there and slowly rips every one of that woman's appendages off. He takes her ears. He takes her nose, her lips. He takes her fingers, her hands, her arms, legs, feet, toes. This is what the system that Rush Limbaugh represents, what he is. This is what he's doing as she sits there and squeals in terror about the liberals. Jesus God, do you not hear that? The liberals! They're going to get me, Rush. Help me, Rush. I don't know what to do. Why don't they move somewhere else and leave us alone so we can all just sink into this morass of American corporatist, neocon, Nazism, and I don't want to think, Rush. Think for me. I'm losing my house. I'm losing my job. I'm losing my health insurance. My kids can't go to a pediatrician, and it's the goddamn liberals, Rush. It really is, Rush. They're the ones who wanted health care. They're the ones who wanted guaranteed income. They're the ones who wanted the system that made sense. Save me from them, Rush. And this poor, miserable woman believes that the liberals did this to her and that Limbaugh is going to save her. By Limbaugh, I mean everything that Limbaugh represents. That's one of the reasons he's getting so monstrously obese. It's because he's eating people like this poor, miserable caller. Just eating her alive. It's astonishing.
Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. Now, last week, I think it was last week, may have been earlier this week, we talked about I'll reiterate a clear example of how sick capitalism can be. And Camilla sent me an email here. This is a story, I guess, I don't know, Camilla, if you heard about it when we talked about it last week or not, but that those two judges in Pennsylvania, who sentenced children to detention jailing, actually, in privately run, capitalist jails because they were getting kickbacks. Two judges, two goddamn judges who, I mean, this is the ultimate capitalist scam. Sell your community's own children into a prison system because you get a kickback. Children, God damn it, children. One of the kids, and we talked about this, they got sentenced to serve some time in this private lockup because she had said something negative about her teacher on her MySpace page or something like that. I mean, it was something that you look at and go, oh, really? And the girl goes to jail. Why? Well, because, the taxpayers send money to the state, and the state contracts with these private prisons and pays them money because the state doesn't want to do it. And then the judges who send children there get a kickback. I mean, Jesus God, you see, that is even worse than the capitalist pigs who used to hire 10-year-olds to go and 8-year-olds to go into the mines of West Virginia. I mean, at least those kids, and this is horrifying to say, but at least they were paid 5 cents a day. These children were sent into a private jail so the prison, so the judges could get kickbacks. God damn. I mean, come on. I mean, come on. If somebody wants to talk about, okay, let's put them on. Grim? Is it Grim? What's your name?
Grim.
Grim. That's an odd name.
That's just Grim on everything that's going on.
Is that your first name or your last name?
It's a nickname I picked up while I was in the military.
All right. What you got on your mind?
Well, in my opinion, everybody is a capitalist to a certain degree. I mean, you work a job to pay bills, and you don't work a job, pay bills, and what's
going to happen? Do you know what capitalism is?
Do I know what capitalism is?
Yeah, give me your definition of it real quick.
My definition of capitalism is doing what one can to benefit himself without basically molesting anybody else.
Well, now what do you mean by molesting?
Well, I kind of march by. People have always accused me of being a little different. I believe that everybody should do for themselves. I don't believe that anybody should look.
Do you just do for yourself?
Do what now?
Do you just do for yourself? Like you believe everybody should do for themselves?
I believe in this. I believe that everybody's born with something called free will.
Okay, wait. You're going way too fast for me. I'm just an old Southern country boy. Do you believe you do for yourself?
I believe, yes, sir, I do. I believe
you do.
That, you know,
well, what do you do for a living?
Let me
back up. Did you go to public school?
I spent 4 years or spent 8 years in a public school.
Wait a minute. If you went to a public school, then you weren't doing for yourself, were you? The taxpayers were doing for you.
Well, hold on a second. No.
I'm taking you at your word. I'm taking you by your definition. I asked you, what does capitalism mean to you? And you said it's doing for yourself. I just want to get it laid out. Did you go to public school? You said yes. All right. Do you ever used a public highway?
Yeah, Mike.
Did you build the highway?
No, Mike, I didn't.
I can go on and on here until we both get dizzy from all the examples. But you see, you don't do just for yourself, do you? Let me ask you this. Did you buy a house? Do you own a house?
Built my own house. Yes, I did.
Yeah, you own it outright.
Yes, I do.
And you saved up, you never took a loan on it to build it?
No, I did not.
Yeah, you saved up all that money and then built it.
Well, what I did was, this is something I learned from my family. My family's been in this country since the beginning of it. This is what I want to get back to.
Yeah.
What you were talking about.
No, wait. How did you build your house? You never borrowed a dime? You saved up, $80,000 and built it?
No, I saved up roughly $280,000 to build my house on 15 acres.
You saved it all up and built it?
Yep.
Okay.
Did as much of the work as I could myself and contracted out what I was not, skilled enough to do.
Whoops. Wait a second. You didn't do for yourself all the way on building your house?
Well, this is what I was trying to explain to you. You made a comment about the public schools, correct?
Yeah, but...
And you said you were a good old Southern boy, right?
Uh-huh.
I grew up in a farming community, so what at that time was a public school, I'm 48 years old, and at that time what was a public school was a one-room schoolhouse of about 28 kids.
Yeah.
And about the time that I would have hit high school, I said something to my mom and dad that I didn't think that I was getting the education that I felt I needed.
You said that when you were in the eighth grade?
About the time I was in eighth grade, and my mom and dad kind of looked at me and thought that I was out of my mind
Let me get this straight. You're almost too much for me. You were 13 years old, Grim, and you said to your mom and daddy, I don't think I'm getting the education I need?
No, I didn't.
You said that to him.
Yeah, that's what I told them.
What kind of an education at 13 did you think you needed?
Well, something a little bit better than what was going on.
What's the point here? You're making me dizzy. Well, 13.
My point is this, and it goes back to your capitalism thing and what you use from the federal government, what you don't use from the federal government. I told my parents that I didn't think I was getting educated the way that I should. So we looked around, put me in a private school. Did my 4 years in private school and graduated with a pretty good education. Could have gone to any college in the country I wanted to on scholarship. But I did at that time, did what my family's always done. I joined the military.
Wait. Scholarship.
Yeah, hold on.
Well, you didn't take the scholarship, did you?
No, I did not.
Because that's somebody else's money.
No, I chose to do the honorable thing and spend 24 years in the military.
Okay, well, let me ask you something. Well, the military, you did that all on your own? What did you do in the military? Did you build tanks?
No, I did not build banks. I defended
tanks. What did you do? No, wait. Come on, don't get all flag wavy on me. You're the one using these examples. What did you do? The military is the most socialistic organization in America, isn't it? I mean, you don't have to pay for your food. You don't have to pay for your shelter. You don't have to pay for your health care. Who paid for all those 24 years?
The first eight years of it until I got married and moved into an apartment of my own that I paid rent on. Prior to that, I was making $725 a month. The rest of the compensation were the clothes, the food, and the roof, and the utilities that were around me.
I won't ask you again who paid for that, because I know the answer. I paid for it. But let me ask you something. What has this got to do? What is your point on capitalism?
My point on capitalism is this. If more people sat around, made the choice to do for themselves, think twice about what they sign in buying a house, whether or not they can or can't afford it, whether or not they can or can't afford a car, whether or not they can or can't do this, that, or the other. But if they sat, honestly thought about, is this a want or is this a need? Because I have never in my life gone by the fact of what I want. It's always been of what I need.
Really? Really?
Yes,
well, let me ask you something. Because I get that point. But what responsibility in being lied to on a mortgage application? What responsibility do the mortgage lenders have? What about mortgage brokers who put out bad product? What about banks that fail? What about billionaires that swindle people? How do you account for that?
Oh man, you got to understand something. The deal with the way the housing market thing fell out. There's blame to go around all the way around. And you can start with, I mean, you can start at one of any places, but you can start with the people who signed that contract to buy that house that didn't read the fine print.
Yeah, okay. I understand. I can't hold on. I got to go. I've had you on for over 8 minutes, and I never let anybody on for 8 minutes. I got to go. Just hang on to your beliefs. What can I tell you?
Radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
I don't know what to say about a call like that. A couple of you do. Who's this from? Well, y'all don't sign them, so I just, you know. But this emailer says, so let me get this straight. This guy, this last caller, paid for his house with the money he made in the military, which are our tax dollars, but he doesn't believe in taxes? Well, kind of that. He didn't believe that. I don't know. And then this is kind of interesting. Rox writes, smudge up your studio with some sage immediately. The last caller freaks me out, makes me want to kill him. Mike, please help me. Please help. Oh, my God. Oh, you know, but I can't, you know, I don't know how to deal with stuff like that. I really don't. Anybody in this country who thinks that they, you know, they do it all for themselves, right? Yeah. In the first place, the only reason their food is so cheap is because, comparatively speaking, is because into the cost of the food is not considered the environmental damage that goes to get this guy his pound of bologna delivered to him or to the store where he goes to buy it. None of the environmental costs are included. None of the costs for energy are included. None of the costs for transportation are included. Not really. It's astonishing to me that anyone in America can say, well, you know, I did it on my own. No, you didn't. And if you really believe that, you're so far beyond reach. The only thing I can ever say to somebody like that is just, okay, all right, you know, go ahead, just carry on. Prairie 2, his missive today on things economic. Prairie 2 writes, the Dow was again dragged down by the plunging value of bank stocks as more people realize the banks are worth less than the toasters they used to give away. The Obama White House slowed the race for the door by again saying they don't want to nationalize the banks, but when pressed by the newly aggressive reporters, refused to rule it out. The banks have to be running low on the TARP money the Bush crime family gave them. When the banks can no longer pay the light bill, Wall Street will get their answer on nationalization. Republican congressmen have been spending their break in the home district bragging about how much stimulus money they were able to secure for their constituents. The Republicans, right. The bill contains a total of $60 billion for infrastructure projects each year. Every penny called generational theft by the Republicans until they get back home and face the voters. Then it's called, well, we're building for the future. According to the Urban Land Institute, we are underfunding infrastructure by $170 billion this year, with the accumulated gap in spending so far at somewhere between $2 and $3 trillion. Meanwhile, the Chinese are spending $800 billion on their infrastructure. They're also going out and buying every oil field and mine they can lay their hands on worldwide, spending $42 billion just this week. If they can't buy it outright, they're making investments that give them a share of resources for decades and often at bargain prices. With $2 trillion, that's $2,000 billion, in cash reserves that they would rather not have in dollars, they can afford to be aggressive. The really stupid thing is that China is spending dollars, our dollars, dollars that the brain trust Republicans funnel to them just so they could tear down the American middle class. How many of you Republicans speak Chinese? Get this phrase translated and practice it. Please, sir, I will work for food. Yeah. Well, that applies to people like me, I guess, but certainly not grim. Oh, Grimm's got to figure it out. God damn it. You know, he's always done for himself, always will. I don't need to, you know, where do you get your water, Grimm? Do you have a well on your property? I'll bet he probably does. Do you have a generator that runs your electric, for your electrical system? This is the thing that's maddening. These people that think they do it on their own. Maybe he does. Okay, what do you put in your generator to generate your electrical system? Diesel fuel? Well, there you go. Oh, no, he probably doesn't. He probably uses switchgrass or something that goes out in the woods and pulls.
My favorite is always, I wonder who they call when they have a heart attack. Did they just scream out the window?
No, they rip open their chest and fix it.
I mean, if you need an ambulance, what do? Just have somebody pick you up and...
An ambulance? You mean 911? There's another one of them communist socialist ideas there.
Run really fast or what?
It's insane. It is completely insane. I mean, anyone who thinks... that is so deluded. I mean, it's so delusional. You know, yeah, I'll sit there and play with people like that for a while and ask them these obvious questions and listen in wonder to the answers, but I'm not going to try to, you know, say any of that, especially that part.
Well, I was in the military for 24 years.
Oh, really? Well, then you certainly were just on your own there, pal.
up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. A couple of you wrote this in, but Steve in Dallas says, hey, Mike, after 24 years, your caller is also getting military retirement and medical care. Yeah, of course he is, unless Grimm is the type that said to the military when he got out, no, I don't want that. That's socialism. I was just happy to serve my country for 24 years, and thank you for paying my room and board and paying me a paycheck. I don't want any of this other stuff. It's communism. Yeah, right. And Prairie 2 writes, if everybody did for himself, where would this genius have made the $300,000 he used to build his house, if that was the amount? What this guy really wants is feudalism, to spec out a hilltop and pile some rocks together so he can defend it from the guy on the next hill who wants it too. No socialist police, fire, military, roads, clean water, on and on and on. Yeah, I don't know how to talk to someone like that. I've heard people like that before. They honestly believe that they've done it all on their own, and it's a shame. It really is a shame. Hartman reads this sometimes. It was something written by John Gray in Cincinnati. I'm going to cut a couple of little graphs out of here because it's too long. Grimm takes his morning shower, reaching for his shampoo. His bottle is properly labeled with every ingredient and the amount of its contents because some liberal fought for his right to know what he's putting on his body and how much it contained. Grimm dresses, walks outside, and takes a deep breath. The air he breathes is clean because some tree-hugging liberal fought for laws to stop industries from polluting our air. He walks to the subway station for his government-subsidized ride to work. It saves him considerable money in parking and transportation fees. You see, some liberal fought for affordable public transportation, which gives everybody the opportunity to be a contributor. Grimm begins his work day. He has a good job with excellent pay, medical benefits, retirement, paid holidays, and vacation because some liberal union members fought and died for these working standards. Grimm's employer pays these standards because Grimm's employer doesn't want his employees to call the union. If Joe is hurt on the job or becomes unemployed, he'll get a worker comp or unemployment check because some liberal didn't think he should lose his home because of his temporary misfortune. Joe is home from work. He plans to visit his father this evening at his farm home in the country. He gets in his car for the drive to Dad's house. His car is among the safest in the world because some liberal fought for car safety standards. He arrives at his boyhood home. He was the third generation to live in the house financed by the Farmers Home Administration because bankers didn't want to make rural loans. The house didn't have electric until some big government liberal stuck his nose where it didn't belong and demanded rural electrification. You see, the Republicans would still have country folks sitting in the dark. Joe's happy to see his dad, who's now retired. His dad lives on Social Security and his union pension because some liberal made sure he could take care of himself so Joe wouldn't have to. After his visit with Dad, he gets back in his car for the ride home. He turns on a radio talk show. The host keeps saying that liberals are bad and conservatives are good. He doesn't tell Joe that his beloved Republicans have fought against every protection and benefit Joe enjoys throughout his day. Anyway, Joe listens and he agrees. He says to himself, you know, we don't need those big government liberals ruining our lives. After all, I'm a self-made man who believes everyone should take care of themselves, just like I have. Yeah, I mean, you know, it just, oh well, what are you going to do? Now, as far as I keep hearing from some of the business reporters, the crazy ones, not rational people like you have on CNN or anything that has to do with NBC, whether it's CNBC, MSNBC, I don't do Fox because they're lying sons of bitches who will say anything, but the hysterics that I hear now, one of the phrases that keeps getting repeated or an idea that keeps getting repeated is that the reason everything's going to hell is because we, the you know, the consumer, we've lost confidence in everything. And if we could just get our confidence back, everything would be okay. Well, Linda in Ohio writes, America's crisis of confidence in the economy, the lack of confidence in the financial system, the lack of confidence in the hope of a better future is the only rational response to the calamity visited upon us by the Republican Party's 30-year war on the working people of America. This lack of confidence is rational. What is revealed daily about the corruption of the American business, corporate, and financial system underscores the rationality of the public response to this debacle. Lack of confidence and lack of trust in the system to fix itself. Lack of confidence that the same people who created the mess can fix it. Lack of confidence in the game that stacks up like a Ponzi scheme and that relies on confidence to keep it going. That's rational. Lack of confidence in the system to heal itself on its of its necrosis. Priceless. And as Roosevelt said, FDR said, quote, confidence thrives only on honesty, on honor, on the sacredness of obligation, on faithful performance. Without them, it cannot live, end quote. Linda. Linda in Ohio. We don't have any confidence anymore in the system. What a lot of people think is they don't have any confidence in the banking system, or they don't have any confidence in the investment houses, or they don't have any confidence in the stock brokers. Those are the dealers in this huge gambling arena called Wall Street. No, we don't have any. Well, that's right. We don't have any confidence in them at all. Why should we? Look at the map. Who did this? The unions, the liberals, I know the women who want an abortion did. No. I know who did this. Gays who want to get married. No. I know. Al-Qaeda did this. No, who did this? Republican, conservative, capitalists, the money fund managers, the bankers, the investment fund managers, everybody's running around going, oh, Jesus Christ, I had no idea. And I'm talking about the so-called little people. We had $750,000 when we retired. Now we have $1.94. Well, do you know why? What did you put your money into? Well, you put your money into something that you thought was going to give you this enormous, irrational, impossible return, didn't you? And it was run by people who knew you felt that way and sucked every dime out of your pocket and took it and ran and laughed their asses off every single time you called in for a statement of how much you were worth. Oh, tell them they're worth $300,000 today. When did we get to the point where we started thinking that millionaires ought to be created and billionaires ought to be created because they did something called selling debt? When did that happen? You know, at least the old robber barons, right? Like, I'll pick one. I don't know. The Rockefellers, the Dale Carnegie. I don't want to pick him because he did an awful lot of good, too. But, you know, all those turn of the last century so-called robber barons, at least they made something. They fought against child labor laws. They fought against unions. I understand that. They were swine and scum, too. But even in their swinishness and their scumminess, they at least made things. Henry Ford, a Nazi sympathizer who wanted all the Jews roasted, at least he made cars! What are these people on Wall Street and in the financial services industry now? What do they make? Hello? I guess the mic's on. What do they make? Well, they make stuff so old Grimm can think that he takes care of him. Say, yeah, you know, I don't rely on nobody. I don't rely on nobody. Okay. What is this? Somebody named J. Darenthal writes in, let the guy talk, two ears, one mouth, use the ears.
Oh, hey, that's a real knee slapper, flanker, Darenthal. God damn, yeah, I bet you're another one of them old self-made people, aren't you? Yeah, I got my bootstraps on, and I'll pull myself up by them. Just, please just keep in mind just a few things. I mean, most of you are smarter than I am, okay? If capitalism is such a wonderful service or system, economic system, why did it insist on 10-year-olds going into mines? Why did it fight unions? Why did it fight a minimum wage? Why has capitalism fought against every single progressive movement in the history of the human race? Why did capitalism have its heyday during slavery? I mean, come on. Don't go wobbly on me. You know the answer to this. I think you're just afraid to confront it. And I don't blame you. It's pretty spooky when all the signs on the road say, danger up ahead, the road is ending.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, are you familiar? I got this. This is from the Daily Times Herald in Carroll, Iowa newspaper. Listen to this. You got to hear this. This is written by Butch Hemin, staff writer, Daily Times Herald, Carroll, Iowa. The Carroll National Guard unit will train on urban military operations by holding a 4-day exercise in Arcadia, Iowa. The purpose of the April 2nd through April 5th drill will be to gather intelligence, then search for and apprehend a suspected weapons dealer, according to Sergeant Mike Kotz, readiness NCO for Alpha Company. Citizens, law enforcement, media, and other supporters will participate. Troops will spend Thursday, April 2nd, staging at a forward operations base at Carroll, Iowa. The next day, company leaders will conduct reconnaissance and begin patrolling the streets of Arcadia to identify possible locations of the weapons dealer. The primary phase will be done Saturday, April 4th, when convoys will be deployed from Carroll to Arcadia. Pictures of the arms dealer will be shown in Arcadia, and soldiers will go door to door asking if residents have seen the suspect. Soldiers will knock only at households that have agreed to participate in the drill, Sergeant Kotz noted. He said, quote, once the credible intelligence has been gathered, portions of the town will be roadblocked and more in-depth searches of homes and vehicles will be conducted in accordance with the residents' wishes. He goes on, one of the techniques we use in today's political environment is cordon and knock. We ask for the head of the household, we get permission to search, and then have them open doors and cupboards. The homeowner maintains control. We peer over their shoulder, and the soldier uses the homeowner's body language and position to protect him. End quote. During this phase of the operation, troops will interact with residents and media while implementing crowd control measures and possibly treating and evacuating injured persons. The unit will use a Black Hawk helicopter for overhead command and control and to simulate medevacs. The drill will culminate in the apprehension of the suspected arms dealer. A meeting to give residents more information and accept volunteers will be held 7 p.m. Monday, March 2nd, in the Arcadia American Legion Hall. Sergeant Cott said, quote, "We have a lot of extended drills this coming year," end quote. In addition to surveillance, searching, and apprehension, the exercise will also give the troops valuable experience in stability, support, patrol, traffic control, vehicle searches, and other skills needed for deployment in an urban environment. Sergeant Cotts added, quote, "This exercise will improve the real-life operational skills of the unit, and it will hopefully improve the public's understanding of military operations," end quote. Cotts also said, quote, "It will be important for us to gain the trust and confidence of the residents of Arcadia. We will need to identify individuals that are willing to assist us in training by allowing us to search their homes and vehicles and to participate in role-playing. We really want to get as much information out there as possible because this operation could be pretty intrusive to the people of Arcadia," end quote. Well, there you go. Don't you love this? One of the techniques we use in today's political environment is cordon and knock, Sergeant Cott says. One of the techniques we use in today's political environment? Oh, my. He says, "We ask for the head of the household. We get permission to search. Then we have them open doors and cupboards. The homeowner maintains control." The fact that... the fact that I have a fully automatic military assault rifle in his back really shouldn't upset the homeowner. He maintains control. By that, we mean, Sergeant Cott says, if he makes a sudden move, we kill him. Therefore, his sudden move meant that he was controlling the trigger finger of one of my guys. Jesus, God. We peer over their shoulder, and the soldier uses the homeowner's body language and position to protect the soldier. But that line that just jumped out at me, one of the techniques we use in today's political environment is cordon and knock. Political environment. What could he mean by that? What could he mean by that? The whole country is run by right-wingers. Media, government, finance. I mean, everything is run by right-wingers. So what? Could this be, in the first place, it sounds to me like just a complete violation of posse comitatus. They're going after the imaginary weapons dealer. Isn't that a federal crime? Isn't that a crime for the FBI and federal marshals, the military? And you got to wonder about this little exercise planned for Arcadia. And like the good sergeant said, you know, we got a lot of these planned. We got a lot of these coming up. You got to wonder. You don't have to wonder at all. You know what it is exactly. Conditioning. Let's get the civilians used to the idea of us coming into their homes and peering over their shoulders. Of course, they'll have complete control, except for the assault rifle that, we have at the backs of their heads. What's going on, truth seekers? Huh? Well, you know as well as I do, don't you? Welcome back. Just one more comment on that I do it all myself nonsense from Arvid, who writes, Mike, I've been befuddling my do-it-yourself tax-evading conservative friends by asking them to stop watching the weather reports on television, listening to radar weather warnings, or even checking the forecast in the newspapers. When they ask why, I remind them that the National Weather Service is a government entity paid for with tax dollars. If they don't think they need government, then they don't need to know when to carry an umbrella. Arvid. Interestingly, remember when who is the senator we talked about last night with the fetus they used to carry around? Santorum, Rick Santorum. Wasn't he the one that tried to introduce legislation to end the National Weather Service? He said that private private corporations would do it better, like the Weather Channel or what have you. Of course, people who don't have cable or satellite or have a system that doesn't have the Weather Channel, they could just pound sand at their asses, I guess. But another one, just another example of the insanity of Republicans. Capitalism takes care of everything. Yeah, it sure does, except life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Everything else is well handled by the garbage. Richard Perle is out there with a new comedy act. Have you followed this? Oh, my God. Yesterday he was at the Nixon Center. And as Dana Milbank writes to the Washington Post, listening to him, there was a sense of falling down the rabbit hole. And I think most of us understand that in real life, Richard Perle was the architect of the Iraq War, the ideological architect. You know, he was one of the signatories to PNAC. Richard Perle is one of the Project for New American Century, if you don't know. He was one of the people that tried to get Clinton back in 97 to wage a full-scale invasion of Iraq. And interestingly, when Clinton refused, within 6 months, the Monica Lewinsky scandal broke. Coincidence. And the fact that Clinton couldn't keep his pants zipped. Yeah, okay. Anyway, Perle was the architect of the Iraq War and the Bush Doctrine of preemptive attack. You know, Richard Perle, a Jew who should know better, since part of the reason for the setting up of the Nuremberg trials was to bring to justice the people who had butchered and murdered 6 million Jews, like Richard Perle, for no reason other than that they were Jews. And one of the decisions, one of the international legal principles that was established at Nuremberg was the absolute illegality of preemptive war, attacking someone, because that's what Hitler did, you see. And Perle, of course, Richard Perle, again, being Jewish, he should understand fully what was decided at Nuremberg, because so much of what was decided was because of the horrendous slave treatment and execution and murder of millions of people inside Germany and Poland, set up, death camps set up by the Nazis. So Perle should understand this, and he does understand it. But Perle is a lying son of a bitch who is now, like Cheney, who's not a Jew. Cheney happens to be a Christian. And like so many of these swine, these scum who've been involved with Bush, they're all trying to save their asses now because they think maybe they hear the sound of the tumbrils turning and the guillotine approaching. But they don't. They're safe. Anyway, Perle, when he gave this speech at the Nixon Center yesterday, he created this fantastic world, as Dana Milbank puts it, in which, one, Perle is not a neoconservative, two, neoconservatives don't exist, and three, even if neoconservatives did exist, they certainly couldn't be blamed for the disasters in the past 8 years. Perle informed the gathering, quote, there is no such thing as a neoconservative foreign policy. It is a left critique of what is believed by the commentator to be a right-wing policy, end quote. So what was that thing put together in 1996, the Project for New American Century, that had a manifesto and demands, and you know, the whole neocon foreign policy was all laid out there, and Pearl was one of the signatories. He co-authored it. That document was the cornerstone of this neocon foreign policy. What did Pearl said? Quote, "My name was on it because I signed up for the study group. I didn't approve it. I didn't even read it." End quote. Do you hear this? This is what the Nazis said when they were on trial in Nuremberg. I had nothing to do with it. My name was on the order to execute hundreds of thousands of people at Treblinka or Auschwitz or Bergen-Belsen or pick a name. My name was on the order, yes. But I didn't read it. I don't know anything about it. The two letters to Bush, signed by Richard Pearl, giving Bush a moral, quote-quote, basis to invade Iraq and demanding Bush remove Saddam Hussein. Also to Clinton. This was the letter sent to Clinton in 96, for Christ's sake. What did Pearl say when someone brought that up yesterday at the Nixon Center? Quote, "I don't have the letters in front of me." Ah. And what about the Bush administration national security strategy? As Dana Milbank writes, enshrining the neoconservative themes of preemptive war and using American power to spread freedom. Pearl says, quote, "I don't know whether President Bush ever read any of those statements. My guess is he didn't." Oh, my God. Dana Milbank says, "The Prince of Darkness," he was named that during his days opposing arms control in the Reagan Pentagon. See, Richard Pearl wanted no nuclear arms control. He wanted nuclear destruction. These people are bloodsuckers. They are vampires. Pearl being one of the leading in that group. Anyway, he was not about to let details get in the way of his argument that, quote, 50 million conspiracy theorists have it wrong, end quote. That's the subtitle of his article for National Interest. You know, 50 million of us have it wrong. He said, quote, "I see a number of people here who believe and have expressed themselves abundantly that there is a neoconservative foreign policy. And it was the policy that dominated the Bush administration. And they ascribe to it responsibility for the deplorable state of the world. None of that is true, of course." End quote. Right. This is the guy who had been the leading cheerleader for the Iraq War. This is the guy that predicted it would take a few troops and last a few days. This is the guy that said Iraq would pay for its own reconstruction. This was the guy who was chairman of Bush's Defense Policy Board, and the president, Bush, clearly took the advice of Pearl and his fellow neocons, and Pearl, in turn, said back then that Bush, quote, "knows exactly what he's doing," end quote. But yesterday at the Nixon Center, Pearl said Bush's foreign policy had, quote, "no philosophical underpinnings and certainly nothing like the demonic influence of neoconservatives that is alleged," end quote. Pearl also took issue with the common view that neocons favored using American might to spread neoliberal values. Quote, "There's no documentation," he said. "I can't find a single example of neoconservatives supposed to have influence over the Bush administration arguing that we should impose democracy by force," end quote. At times, the Prince of Darkness turned on his questioners. Fielding a question from the Financial Times, he said that the Financial Times, quote, "propagated this myth of neoconservative influence," end quote. He informed Stephen Halper of Cambridge University that, quote, "you have contributed significantly to this mythology," end quote. Halper replied, "well, there are some 5,000 documents that you've signed." But documents did not deter denials. Pearl said, I've never advocating attacking Iran, he said to a few chuckles. Regime change does not imply military force, at least not when I use the term, he said. Accusations that neocons manipulated intelligence on Iraq, he said, there's no truth to that. And at one point, he argued that the word neoconservative actually is an anti-Semitic slur. And that was just moments after complaining that prominent figures like Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, Christians both, had been grouped in with the neoconservatives. Pearl speculated when the session ended, I don't know that I persuaded anyone about anything. You see how this works? You see how this works? Richard Pearl, who is up to and beyond his eyeballs in the blood of other people. I know nothing. I don't know anything.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Regarding Richard Pearl, Andre writes in, this is what happens when you don't impeach, when you allow the criminals to roam free. Why sure. And it's not just Richard Pearl. My God, there must be a couple of hundred of them. Real predators. I mean, predators of the worst kind who... Because the nobody in the Bush crime family who have broken every single international law available to break, whether it is preemptive strikes against a country that can't defend itself for no reason other than to steal its resources, or the violation of Geneva Conventions, whether it is about torture or the handling of prisoners or rendition. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, these are serious, serious crimes, right? And there are people in this country who advocate, well, let's just, you know, move forward. And I think one of those who advocates that happens to be the president. But you'll hear commentators say, well, no, we got to move forward. Okay. Why didn't we do that when the Germans said the same thing after World War II? When everybody over there was saying, look, okay, so, you know, we murdered a lot of people and we really did a lot of hell, but, you know, you beat us and it's over. And, except for I look into the future and I see maybe 60 years from now, a bunch of half asses in various countries around the country calling themselves skinheads and neo-Nazis. But aside from that, come on, give us a break. All right. We believed in something. We were nationalists. We, you know, the Jews got in the way. The queers got in the way. The gypsies got in the way. But, you know, come on, let's move forward. And, the rest of the world said, no, we're not going to move forward. Matter of fact, we're going to put you on trial because what you did was pretty serious. You know, it really was pretty serious. We're going to put you on trial. And we're going to hang some of you, and some of you will give you the option. If you want a military execution and die by firing squad, you can have that. Sure, we'll give that to you. Some of you are going to jail. A couple of you are going to commit suicide before you come to trial because you're Nazis. You're cowards. You're like Republicans. You're cowards. We did all that, didn't we? And now we have people in this country who say, no, war crimes, schmore crimes. You know, we got to look forward. Torture, schmorture. You know, invading countries unprovoked. Doing business, continue to do busy business, happy ass, grab ass business with the people who funded the people that came here to bomb us. You know, the Saudis, they're our good friends. We love the Saudis. So let's go bomb somewhere else. I know where let's go. Let's go bomb Afghanistan. Why Afghanistan? Because they had schools out there that taught people to be Islamists. Oh, but where'd the money come from? Oh, Saudi Arabia. Well, why don't we bomb there? Oh, no, those are Bush family business partners, and they have the oil. Christ. You want us to bomb people that have the oil? You out of your mind? I'm having a hard time with this.
Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It is 25 past the hour, or before the hour, excuse me. Back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Jefferson, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1. The Mike. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mike. Longtime listener. Love the show.
Thank you every night.
Love it. My wife sometimes says, it gets you worked up. I said, yes, it gets you worked up, but it keeps people thinking, keeps the blood pumping to the head.
Well, I'm glad you say that. Thank you.
And it was something you said earlier tonight, especially when you were reading about, you know, how, you know, it's the liberals that, you know, kept people working, you know,
right.
40 hours a week and, you know, unions and stuff like that. And they forget that liberals kept parks going and things like that. And it made me think of a line from one of the Superman movies that the actor Robert Vaughn says to Richard Pryor. And Robert Vaughn plays this multi-cajillionaire who wants to take over the world's oil and banks and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard Pryor says to him, but you have all the money and wealth and everything in the whole world. Why do you want to do this? And he says, ah, my dear Gus, it's not enough that I succeed, but that everyone else fails.
Right, right.
And isn't that the conservative mentality?
It is. It is indeed. You know,
brain rot that I can't fit my head around.
I know. When they talk about, oh, we are the success society or whatever the hell they say. You know, it is just simply not true. That's where this so-called rugged individualism nonsense comes from.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't succeed on your own, then you're somehow a lesser human being or something. It's insane.
And I mean, she's a sweet lady, but my 87-year-old mother-in-law lives with us half of the year. She lives with my sister-in-law the other half of the year, and she's a McCarthyite. You know what I mean? And we watch the same stuff on TV, and she listens to that Rush Limbaugh brain rot.
Right.
And But she watches, like, the devastation of Katrina, and she watches all the things going on, but she just can't fit her head around it. And it's like, you don't see what they've done, but it's always somebody else's fault. It's never the conservatives' fault. You know, the conservatives have been good for this country. And I asked her, I said, if you can tell me one good thing that George W. Bush did, I will take everything back. Just one thing. And she can't. She never can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and then sometimes she starts fights. And it's like, and my wife will go, you know, honey, she's 87 years old, and, you know, she can't get riled up. I said, well, then tell her not to be picking fights, you know, because it's hard for me to keep my mouth shut.
I hear you. Yeah. But it's your mother-in-law, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Just nod and smile and
go out
and take a couple more tokes and just relax.
I come downstairs and I work on my hobbies, and I'll put on Air America, or I'll put on the oldie station, listen to the Beach Boys and stuff,
right.
And just, you know, like you said, just smile and just calm down, because some nights it's like I hear you. You're ending the show and you're screaming. It's like Mike's gonna pop a vein.
Yeah, but you have to love your mother-in-law, right?
Yeah, I've got grandkids because of my stepdaughter, mm-hmm. and so our oldest is 4 years old, like Molly, and it's so funny hearing how you are with Molly and how you think of the world, and how sometimes Daddy has to maintain because I've got Molly. And I think mm-hmm. the same thing. I have to maintain because these kids are depending.
That's right.
But I listen to you every night and love what you do and just keep doing it.
Well, thanks, Joe. I appreciate it.
We're out there for you.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Take care.
We have another Bush Nazi, of course, who's been making the rounds. And of all places, he ran up on CNN's D.L. Hughley show. Was it last night? It's D.L. Hughley Breaks the News. It's on in the evenings on CNN. Good show. Hughley, of course, is a comedian. So it's not surprising that Ari Fleischer, went on Hughley's program to finally wrest the W word out of one of the Bush crime family consigliors, Ari the pencil neck geek. Hughley did. This was from a larger interview, which will air tomorrow. But anyway, in this little clip that's making rounds, Hughley says to Ari Fleischer, "Did you get the sense that some of the things Bush was saying that the American people weren't going to buy? Did you think any of that at any time?"
Destruction. The Egyptians thought it. The French thought it. The Germans.
Wait, that's the wrong. We'll find it. Okay. Hughley said, "Did you get the sense that some of the things Bush was saying the American people weren't going to buy? Did you think any of that at the time?"
Well, I always thought there were things that he was doing that was tough, and the American people might not go along. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, I was there at the beginning of the administration.
Right.
It was a different era for George Bush,
yeah.
And as time went on, it got a lot harder for him.
Why?
Because
did it get hard?
Because we were wrong about weapons of mass destruction being in Iraq. If he had been right and we found the stockpiles, as bad as the war turned out to be, much worse than we all thought it would be, I think most Americans still said, well, I didn't like going to war, but thank God we stopped Saddam from using
when
those.
You found out that...
We were wrong.
I don't know that I've ever heard anybody associated with the president say that. I just don't know. But when you found out that you were wrong, how did that make you feel? You know that you had been part and parcel of the war, so...
You just scratch your head and say, how could we be wrong?
You just scratch your head and say, how could we be wrong? How could we be wrong? You lying son of a bitch. All of these people. No, Ari, you didn't scratch your head and say, how could we be wrong? You increased the troop strength and continued the slaughter. And you sent 4,000 plus Americans to their deaths. And you sent another 20,000 into severe physical, wounded, grievously wounded, who are going to be walking along with three limbs now, or two, or one, who have had half of their goddamn brains blown away. What do you mean, you bald-headed son of a bitch, that you said you just scratch your head and say, how could we be wrong? This is the attitude, you see? This is the attitude. And no, Ari Fleischer, you weren't wrong about weapons of mass destruction. He says, if we had been right and we'd found the stockpiles, you slimy slug, you knew there were no stockpiles. You people knew it from the beginning. But you see what he does? Now, why doesn't D.L. Hughley sit there and just say to him, that's not true, Ari. The whole world knows it's not true now. The whole world knows about the Downing Street memo where the British government said, yeah, we were at a meeting, and what was being discussed was how the lies had to be fixed around the plan. Doesn't Hughley know that? If he doesn't know that, why is he inviting a war criminal, a neo-Nazi like Ari Fleischer, onto his program? Who doesn't know that? Who doesn't know there's a website out, the DowningStreetMemo.com or whatever the hell it is? Who doesn't know this? So Ari Fleischer gets another chance. There it is, once again. And more of this lying filth is dumped out into the public. Again and again and again. It's the big lie technique. You say Rush Limbaugh is a perfect example of that. You tell lies enough times with a large enough megaphone, and eventually it becomes truth. This is the Joseph Goebbels line, and Ari Fleischer should know this, especially Ari Fleischer, and he must be embarrassed because he's Jewish too, and he understands the war crimes committed by the administration of which he lied for and fronted for and was a shill for. I wonder if Ari Fleischer has relatives who were butchered in the Nazi death camps. And yet he is willing to stand there all those years and defend a war criminal who did the same thing that Hitler did, only not on the same scale. This is astonishing. It's astonishing what is going on. You can't turn on your television anymore without one of these criminals, one of these neo-Nazis from the Bush crime family, somewhere showing up, presenting these lies, and nobody challenging them. Nobody! And I understand. I'm not going to get in Hughley's case. He's not a questioner. He's not a news guy. And I'll bet you dollars to manhole covers that somebody in Ari Fleischer's group approached Hughley to be on the program. You know, a comedian, D.L. Hughley, D.L. Hughley Breaks the News is his program. I'm not dissing his program. But D.L. Hughley, a stand-up comic, a sitcom guy, is going to call one of the biggest war criminals of the Bush crime family and call him in for an interview and then ask him, like, well, when you found out you were wrong, how did that make you feel? How did that make you feel?
Nope. This one's a pencil man. And if there's one thing lower than a sideshow freak, it's a gritty, scum-sucking, pencil-neck geek. You see, if you take a pencil that won't hold lead, looks like a pipe cleaner attached to a head, add a buggy whip body with a brain that leaks, you got yourself a grit-eating, pencil-neck geek. Pencil-neck geek, grit-eating freak, scum-sucking P.F.
Before the hour, thanks to Ian Hoffman, engineer of the program tonight, our podcast manager and technical advisor, Ben Birch, Sharon Gordy, military affairs correspondent, Bridget Wolf, and Bob Alexander, the ethical advisor of the program, Bruce Enberg, our economic advisor, and Catherine Bede, the executive producer. Huh? This is kind of interesting. Ann writes in, hi, Mike. I've been listening to your show, listening to you for over 5 years. I haven't heard to call in yet, but I decided to send my first email. I'm the oldest of 9 children from a Republican Catholic family. We all had help with room and board during the summer stint from college. Most of my siblings had scholarships or student loans. We all worked hard and didn't have much money during college, but we knew if we really needed it, Mom and Dad would find a way to send us $20. I saw the light before the Iraq War, started reading books and looking at all sides of the issues. I had been a Republican, well, both my parents were, since 1972 when I was among the first 18-year-old voters to vote for Nixon. Once the blinders were thrown off my eyes, for example, I saw Rush for the liar he is, I never looked back. However, it has caused problems with my Republican family. We don't discuss politics now. This happened after comments from one of my sisters during the 2003 invasion of Iraq when she said, quote, well, if you don't support our president, you can leave the country, end quote. We don't discuss politics now, so they don't have to admit how wrong their views and allegiances to the Bush baby were. It's sad when you can't share your views, hopes, and passions with those you love most. Thanks for your show. With the insights and information that reaffirm I am not nuts. At least I can yell at my computer and have my martini afterwards. Anne. Yeah, the numbers of people in this country who are not nuts, and that number is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, relatively speaking, relative to the general population. I mean, there's still millions of people, but it is getting smaller. And I'm not exactly sure how to reverse it. One of the things that has totally blown me away, we have been conditioned in this country to accept lies and distortions without you know, either digging the truth out ourselves or waiting for the truth to come out. It's become almost commonplace to just, maybe it's because of information overload, maybe it's because so much of the information comes from right-wingers now over the past 20 years. Radio, television, newspaper columns, there are so many crazy sites on the Internet, yada, yada, yada. But the willingness to just accept things at face value, the recent upheavals at Nova M is a classic example of people just so – I mean, some of the stuff I've been reading lately from people I thought knew – better, knew how to dig out a story, to dig out the truth. People have made comments about me without ever checking with me first. You know, it's all over the place. Nobody, it's incredible. And it's all I can do to just look at this stuff and just say, well, isn't that a goddamn shame? But that's the way it goes. People that should know better. I don't expect the right-wing bloggers to give a tinker's damn about the truth, but they'll write anything because most of them are failures, anything else they tried. So they go to the, well, I'm a blogger. Yeah, okay, sure you are. But what is amazing to me on this Nova M upheaval and death of the network is just how much stuff that's out there that, you know, it starts as people talking about things and then all of a sudden that becomes, oh, well, that's got to be true, doesn't it? And it just goes on and on and on. And the principals involved who don't say anything because of the legal ramifications, nobody can say a goddamn word in the society anymore. Somebody's going to sue you. And I'm sitting here kind of an observer. And I look at all this and I think to me, you know, I said the other night, I get all these emails from people asking me, what happened? What happened? You know, I just want to answer back. It's none of your goddamn business. If you think because you listen to a talk show host, you own her when she does whatever she does or he does whatever he does. And then they don't take the time to tell you, you know, in an email, don't email me, email them. You know, you heard me give that rap the other night. Well, it's beyond that now. I'm starting to read things in weekly newspapers and blog sites and all this stuff where people are talking about me like you know, I've been something other than an employee for the past 2.5 years. You know, I just come in and do my program and go goddamn home. I've told people over and over again, don't ask me anything about the business. I don't know anything about this business, about the personalities. I don't care. I couldn't care less. I committed to a radio show. But it's been a learning experience to see how many people that I just kind of brushed up against, or they've brushed up against me over the past 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years, who all of a sudden are experts on my involvement with whatever happened between the Drobnys and Rhodes. You know, like, wow, really? And I'm reading this stuff. And there's plenty of people out there who are just more than willing to forward this garbage to me. And okay. And I read it and I think, what? What in the hell is that? You know, but I think that is just a tiny, itsy bitsy little in my corner of the world example of how information sharing and the truth has been totally subsumed to garbage, crap. And it's just one more tiny, itsy bitsy piece of the puzzle that when finally put together, the jigsaw puzzle, when finally put together, means, well, nothing's real. So if nothing's real, then just burn it up, right? I'll see you Monday. Yeah, I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, and have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.